internet, and welcome to this special Sunday bonus episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and yes, this is another bonus episode. We'll publish our usual ep tomorrow, but we're co-producing this episode with GE as part of their Breakthrough series on the National Geographic Channel. Usually Cracked Podcasts feature me talking to Cracked writers and editors about stuff we're learning or talking about in our editorial meetings. But in this bonus Breakthrough series of four Sunday podcasts, I'm talking to the people who actually do the research, like real live scientists who are doing mind-blowing research that is making reality in the not-too-distant future look like sci-fi movies. Real life scientists who are shockingly patient with me as I ask them questions like, so you guys make a Terminator yet or what? And, you know, blink if you made a Terminator and you can't tell me. Or, I know you said earlier that you didn't make a Terminator yet, but assuming you were lying, can I take a Terminator out for a spin, like piggyback ride style, or he can carry me across his shoulders Vietnam style, or I could ride his shoulders like a chicken fight, or he could carry me around with his robot arm under my bottom like a baby? It really doesn't matter to me. Dealer's choice. I just want to ride a human robot like a person-shaped horse. Is that too much to ask? I guess I have to turn that into a question. Anyways, turns out, yes, that's way too much to ask. Anyways, this week, we're previewing the Breakthrough episode called More Than Human. Last week, you may have noticed I had to insert a lot of the sci-fi movie references and context because the person we were talking to was a doctor who, of course, doesn't view potential pandemics in terms of which outbreak movie they're most like. Thankfully, I'd be worried for our future if I asked him about the Ebola outbreak and he was like, oh, you seen 12 Monkeys? But this week we're talking about mech suits and other awesome fusions of the human body and technology. And our first expert, who, by the way, awesomely sounds a lot like Paul F. Tompkins' Werner Herzog impression, was totally game to speak in terms of sci-fi movies with mech suits in them. Just from Jump Street, totally versed in all those movies. He starts out explaining how the future is different from those sci-fi movies, but I don't want you to miss how surreal the future he describes is. Instead of Ripley using the giant mech exosuit to fight the alien queen, Ripley will be using it to bathe you and carry you to bed when you're old. The future is gonna be weird, y'all. Anyways, that's what we're going to listen to first. I'll be back after that to introduce our second conversation, really just keeping you posted on what I'm going to be up to over here. I hope you enjoy this conversation with my man, Oliver Meyer, and I'll talk to you in a few.
My name is Oliver Meyer. I'm senior principal at GR Global Research, located in München in Germany. And I'm there responsible for technology development in distributed hybrid power systems and also involved in robotics topics.
And we're going to talk to you about the robotics side of things. Let's start out really broad. And we've seen movies imagine how technology and mankind will merge in the future. I'd be interested in hearing some ways you could see humans merging with technology that you haven't seen depicted in movies.
So, in recent movies, there have been demonstrated, for example, exoskeletons. I recall Elysium or Iron Man or Edge of Tomorrow, where people are using exoskeleton to improve their capabilities. But maybe the difference is, in the movie, the exoskeleton normally exaggerates the character of the person. So if it's a good guy, he gets even better. If it's a bad guy, he gets even worse. Whereas we are trying to compensate deficiencies of people with such an exoskeleton. So, for example, if you're paralyzed down from the hips and you need a wheelchair, cannot walk, and every stair gets a real problem, so there to use exoskeleton that somebody can walk with his foot, operated then by motors and actuators. So Yeah, that's what we're working and looking at these technology to help people.
One of the deficiencies that I think you guys have been helping with is helping people do things that would be extremely difficult for a normal human body, like controlling heavy machinery.
Exactly. For example, heavy loads. If you're looking, you're mounting a car and you have to bring in a motor into the car. Normally, you have to have a lift device. It's quite complicated. Such a motor block has a weight of several hundred kilos or something. So that's quite difficult. And there to say, how can we use such a robot or exoskeleton that helps you working? So it will take the load, and you, as a human, you move the stuff to the correct position. Or in caretaking, when you have elder people, you take care of them at home when they are sick or when they are old, and you have to turn them, you have to bring them to the bathroom, to washing. If you have to carry your father or your mom, it's very heavy. So there to use these systems for supporting people and make this life easier.
So rather than being exosuits that we'll be seeing on the battlefield, it's as likely that we'll be being carried by people in exosuits to go to the bathroom in our extreme old age.
You always can use also an exoskeleton for doing bad thing, but we're looking more for the healthcare application and to help in these areas, and also from a technology point to see how we can manage to operate these suits. So you see in films that, you know, you can do it directly out of your brain or your nerves. This is partly already possible to do so, but also there's a long way to go to make it as smart moving as feeling an exoskeleton part of your body as it is in the film. So this is today still at the beginning.
I know that when I sit in my car to go to work in the morning, I'm not thinking, okay, I'm controlling this thing. It is almost as if my car is an extension of my body. So it's probably a relationship that would disappear pretty quickly once someone has the hang of using the exoskeleton, right?
Of course. I mean, it's like, smartphone is also today part of your person.
One possibility that seems like it could be a reality in the near-term future to me would be the one in WALL-E, that sort of this idea that by making certain tasks slightly easier, whatever muscle we were using to do that task before could atrophy. Sort of the way that an astronaut going into space, for a few weeks, they lose bone density and muscle mass, like at a shocking rate. Is that one of the considerations you guys are taking into account?
Yeah, I understand your point. If you want also to refer to a film, it's E-Wall.
WALL-E, yeah.
You recall that one with the animated film with a robot on Earth where life was dead. I think this will be the interesting balance to find the right way to do this. And not to exaggerate and say, okay, this kind of technology will help to do you everything, to keep people at a certain load. But the reason why I don't think this will happen is because we have, in countries, a high consciousness about how important fitness is. You know, people are doing today training on their own. They're running in the park, walking. And the point is, at a certain stage, you find out when you're getting older, it is not possible anymore, and then you stop. And there, this could help to reactivate this for you. And also, you could add sensors that are measuring, you know, how dynamic, flexible the bones are, or how much is the muscle still active. And you could adapt this technology to say, okay, this muscle is only so small, still active, so I reduce the support to build it up again. I think that's exactly feedback loops we need in order to develop the technology in the right direction and just to avoid what you're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly what I had in mind when I was thinking of that science fiction future was the movie. Here we call it WALL-E. That's interesting that it's reversed there. Are there any other sort of possibilities that you don't think people generally consider when it comes to the fusion of humanity and machine?
Very difficult, because if you're looking, for example, at the science on how technology is evolving, there's one rule saying technology will always evolve to better adapt to the human senses. And if you're now looking a little bit through the centuries of the past, you know, the technology already today is going in that direction that it's working together with a human being. Now look at all the tools that we have available today. they're all done that you can easily operate them. Maybe they're not the part of your body, but cooking coffee 200 years ago, you know, you had to have a fire, you had to have a pot on the fire, you had to cook water, you had to bring it to the coffee, and I don't think they even had filters or whatever, they just mixed it. So it was a hard process. And things have gone very smart today. You know, you push the button on a coffee machine, which you can also say it's adopted to your person. You talked about sitting in your car and feeling like this was a second body around yourself, where you feel comfortable, it's climated, it's cool in the summer, it's warm in the winter time, it protects you from rain, you know, you hear music, you can put your seat at any situation. So in the farthest sense, you could also consider this to be already a kind of exoskeleton, not as near to your body as these exoskeleton, how we would call them today. So it's just coming closer and closer to the person, and it will merge more and more. And in end effect, it eases our life today. And I think this is a trend that will be kept on. And if we're doing the right way as we do today, and also have a look on the impact to the environment, which at the end means the energy that is consumed with it. Because the more we're getting these kind of system helping us, making our life more comfortable, the more energy we need for these systems. I think this is one challenge, because this is a backward effect to environment, high energy consumption, and the impact that we have here on the environment, and we have to take care of this. And by the way, if you're asking me today what is the major limiting factor for these kind of technologies, it's still the energy provision. Batteries are not at the point yet that you can operate exoskeletons for a longer time or as easy. And the second thing is how to put them on and off very fast. So these are the big topics that one needs to work about.
That's something that I learned a year ago that was surprising to me at the time, was that almost 90% of the body of my smartphone is just battery, because we've not figured out a way to make batteries any smaller, really, throughout the years.
Yeah, and there's another thing to consider. If you get a glass of schnapps, that's the energy the human body needs to run 10 kilometers. How far does a car or a bicycle go with 2 centiliters of schnapps? You know, it will just turn the motor 2 or 3 times and that's it. So the human being in efficiency usage is still very, very good. And technology still has a long way to go to come up to that level. So the energy topic, that is for all these systems, I would say, at the moment, still a very limiting factor, which ensures that you just don't do everything that you want with it.
That's interesting that you're almost framing it as you're bringing the exoskeletons and the machines up to the level of the human body, which is still by far the most efficient machine that we have. I've heard the brain certainly described as the most incredible machine that we've discovered to this point. You said the sort of efficiency of kind of converting energy as one of the challenges, and then like taking it off and putting it on quickly is another one of the big challenges that you guys face. Is the possibility of it being sort of enmeshed into the body permanently something that's being considered, or is that too drastic at this stage?
You know, my son is disabled. He has only half an arm on his left side, and he was born that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also one of the drivers why I'm very excited about the technology. And it's interesting to see and to learn how he's thinking about this kind of stuff. For him, this is a tool. He says, I wear it. It's part of my body. I'm used. He has a prosthesis, which he has a finger, so he can open and close. So not these Michelangelo, you know, where you can move each finger separately, but he is only the thumb and the middle finger that he can open and close. Very, very simple, very robust old one. But for him, it's part of himself because it opens him functionality. I ask him, well, you know, but you look like a cyborg. He says, and? And, you know, for me it helps, so what do you want? And also, for example, for putting on and off, these are customer pain points that we've learned when we talk. Because as a technician, you know, you always love technology, and you often sometimes forget about seeing what does the person or the customer at the end, what is his problem? What does he want to have solved? Which might be a little bit different from the technology you're thinking or dreaming of. So I can imagine that it gets part of you. It can get the, you know, if you want to simplify it, if you today you have a broken leg, it might be that you get some metal inserted in your leg, you know, a plate for 2 years or whatever. Well, this is nothing, you know, with motors or moving, but it's metal that a doctor inserted in your body. And you're walking with them, you're moving with it. If you're at the airport, you have every time to declare why the scanner makes a big beep. Yeah, I have here metal inside, and here's the x-ray that you can see it. This is also already first step to being part of that body. If you're looking today at clothes or what you're wearing, take another prosthesis. That is my glasses. If you're thinking of glasses, it's a prosthesis. Normally, I don't wear it, I cannot see sharp. So for me, my glasses, these are my prosthesis that make me work and compensate the deficiency I have. And this is part of my body. So I think we have already made the first step. And as long as it is of value, people will do it.
That makes sense to me. I mean, the pacemaker is another example, right?
Exactly.
It's interesting to think if there will be advances in the coming years that will have us living to 150 years old.
Also, I just went grandpa 1 year ago, so it's interesting to see, 200 years ago, I would already go down the end of my life. Today, I have still 30, 40 years to live. So an interesting way coming from the exoskeleton down to the philosophy question, where do we develop with our technology in the future? Anyway, interesting times to work on these technologies and to work for a company that enables this and promotes this development to change our world into a better world.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Oliver. It was really great talking to you. All right, that was my conversation with the awesomely German voice of Oliver Meyer. The next person I talked to is someone I've been teasing for a little while because he spent years working in the lab of the brilliant neuroscientist David Eagleman, who is someone I talk about a lot on the Regular Cracked podcast. And our next guest comes at this idea of fusing technology and humanity from an angle that's somewhat counterintuitive. So imagine that your senses are like input wires on the back of a computer uploading information. You have a taste wire, smell wire. By the way, the instruments at the ends of those wires are by no means the best. We'll talk about how there are lots of animal senses that are much more powerful than ours. A bloodhound's sense of smell is so powerful, it basically has a sense of time travel, since it doesn't just tell the bloodhound what is happening at the present moment, like our meager senses, which can only, you know, look out the window and see what's happening on your street right now. Bloodhound's sense of smell tells it everything that's happened all week on your street, who's walked by your house, whether they're smoking, etc. But humans have these standard input devices that are feeding different types of information into the brain, into our CPU, which turns it into the souffle we perceive as reality. And the idea we end up getting to is that you can add input wires. I thought that was like a fixed number of input ports in our brain, but he's exploring this idea that you can add senses to your brain with technology. I'll let him explain how, and I'll be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then.
I'm Scott Novick. I am the Chief Technology Officer at a company called Neosensory, a company that was spun off of my PhD work on giving people new senses through vibrational feedback.
Can you start at the very basic level and tell us what you mean by new senses?
Sure. All of our senses, all the information is fed through our sensory receptors. So in your ear, you have these hair cells that when they bend, they fire these electrical signals to the brain in response to sound. In your skin, you have these receptors that code for different types of touch or temperature or vibration. And it turns out that your receptors don't actually care what information they're conveying. All your brain ever sees are these kind of electrical signals, and it picks out meaning from these signals to give rise to new perceptions. So what that means is you don't necessarily need to send touch information through your sense of touch or necessarily audio information through your sense of hearing. All it is at the end of the day are these receptors that are just firing electrical signals.
So I think one of the helpful ways to kind of conceptualize what you're doing is just thinking about animals.
Yeah. So if you look across the animal kingdom, there's this whole like rich variety of senses that we as humans just can't even begin to fathom. For example, you have like mantis shrimp, which have, I think, 16 different types of photoreceptors and can like see in trinocular vision. You have birds that have magnetite that can sense kind of the orientation of the Earth's magnetic field. But I guess the point is, though, that we're all kind of evolved from the same common ancestor. So maybe it's the case that all Mother Nature had to do was develop kind of one brain, and then all of our senses act as these peripheral plug-and-play devices where the brain is able to kind of extract meaning from all of these signals it's getting.
So it seems like people understand, okay, there are hearing aids that bring people who are hearing impaired up to the level of normal hearing. And it seems like what you guys are doing with vibration feedback is to almost create new senses?
Yeah, that's totally right. We started out with hearing, and that's mostly what we're currently focused on at the moment. So there's this area of research called sensory substitution, which got started in the late 60s by this guy, Paul Bacchirita. Sensory substitution is the idea of taking information from one sense and then feeding that into another sense. So you had this guy, Paul Bacchirita, and he took this dental chair, and in the back of this dental chair, he put these little things that would like poke you in the back. And he tied this all to a video camera feed. So if you wave something in front of the video camera, you'd kind of feel the outline of that shape in front of the camera in your back. And he sat blind people in this dental chair, and by practicing and waving objects in front of this camera, people got really good at being able to kind of figure out what these objects were and maybe starting to develop some sort of visual perception from this.
So they could, if you like waved an apple versus a banana, you would be able to tell from the vibrations on your back which was which.
Exactly, exactly. So fast forward to, I think, like early 2000s, you get this, there's this company called YCAB. They developed this device called the BrainPort, which is the same exact principle. But what they do is you take a video camera, you put it on your forehead, and this is for blind people, and you take the pixels from the video camera feed and you feed them onto this electro-tactile grid worn on the tongue. So it's this electronic thing you wear in your tongue, and it gives your tongue these small little micro-stimulations, these small micro-shocks, as if you're touching a 9-volt battery to your tongue. And essentially, the pixels are mapped to these little stimulations. And blind people, within about a day of training, can start to navigate obstacle courses and kind of start to figure out objects. And so what's really crazy is this stuff's been around for so long, but it's only sort of recently that we've been able to really start to take a look at it scientifically, because now we have the available cheap computational power and energy storage, right? We have these cell phones that can now like play 3D video games and things. It's totally crazy, all within the last 4 or 5 years. So this has really enabled the research in this area to accelerate.
So that's beyond the 5 senses that we have right now, or are there more senses than that that we already have?
So I think defining senses is pretty difficult. I think we naturally have actually more than 5 senses. For example, like we can use acoustic cues to figure out where things are or to perform spatial tasks, right? Like if you're maybe in a room that you're really familiar with, you may be able to figure out where you are in the room based on kind of like the small echoes and reverbs that you're hearing. So when I joined David's lab, I joined his lab as an electrical engineer. He's a neuroscientist. And I basically walked into his office one day, and during our office hours, he's like, hey, let's create a device that gives people new senses. And the idea was, can we somehow maybe not necessarily take vision, or can we feed weather data to people, or can we somehow use multiple video camera angles or something? So let me back up and say we decide initially that we're going to start targeting sending information through our sense of touch, because you have all of this skin on your body, that's especially in your torso, that's really not ever being used. One challenge with designing sensory substitution devices or devices that give people new senses are, it's not like you can just put these on and immediately be able to interpret everything. This stuff kind of takes training. So designing a system that doesn't interfere with kind of your daily activities is kind of important. So we decided, because of that, you're constantly using your vision and your sense of hearing. We decide we're going to go through the skin. And it turns out that there's lots of kind of cheap little vibrational interfaces, like little motors in your cell phone that we can use to basically cause your touch receptors to fire and send this information to the brain. So we made this huge list, and we finally hit we arrived at sound to touch.
Yeah, so sound to touch, just, are you making people able to hear things that they wouldn't otherwise be able to hear?
So the very initial idea was, yes, let's give people new senses. And then we stumbled on sound to touch. And the idea with sound to touch was taking sound, mapping it to your sense of touch. And this was originally with the intention of providing this information to deaf individuals and trying to capture enough information to relay speech. The idea being that a deaf person would wear this vest underneath their clothing. In real time, any sound from the environment gets picked up, but with enough quality to relay speech. So if someone comes up to you and you're deaf and says the word cat, you feel the buzzing of your body, of the representation of the word cat. And if they say dog, it feels maybe a bit different, and you can differentiate between the two of those sounds. So there's all this kind of underlying math that goes into this, which is, the idea is, how can we take this sound, this very fast sound signal, and convert this to something that can be mapped across a bunch of vibrational elements on the torso and still capture enough information for speech. And we worked out the math for this and kind of had this epiphany that, oh, wait, the math we just kind of figured out doesn't have to necessarily be for sound. We can take any sort of signal that you can think of. And now we have a mathematical way of converting that to a new mathematical representation that's suitable for your sense of touch.
So it could be, for instance, eyes in the back of your head, essentially.
Yeah, you could do eyes behind your head. You can do things like give people supersonic hearing, or maybe subsonic hearing, like be able to hear a dog whistle. If you had the right kind of camera, maybe you could feed people like infrared images or other sorts of video streams that you can't see with your normal eyesight, that's out of the range of normal human vision. And then there's all these other kind of complex data streams out there that you could start looking at, like weather data or stock market data. Can we feed weather data to people and have them be able to predict whether or not it's going to rain? And can they predict better than a computer simulation? Lots of crazy stuff you can start thinking of once you realize you have a way of effectively sending this information through your sense of touch.
So with the weather data, are you saying that essentially they would be getting constant input of maybe where it's raining or the hyperbaric pressure or whatever, and eventually just their brain would come to synthesize that information and be able to predict better than a computer simulation when it was about to rain?
Maybe. It's hard to say because we haven't tested that one yet. Maybe something that you can maybe put yourself more in the shoes of would be something like quadcopter pilots. So the idea is you take a quadcopter, a little drone, and you take information like how fast it's moving, where it is relative to you, its kind of roll, pitch, and yaw. It's all this sort of state information about it. And you feed that to the person. And can they become a much better pilot than someone who doesn't have access to this information? And with training and getting feedback, does the drone almost become an extension? Like, do you feel what it's like to be the drone?
So rather than being a thing where you pick up a remote and then focus on controlling the quadcopter, you have a constant input feed of what the quadcopter's up to. And I guess it's almost by making it continuous and sort of a steady source of input, it becomes almost a sense, right?
Exactly. So I guess maybe a good parallel to this is, let's say you lose an arm and you get a robot arm. Performing like simple spatial like reaching and grabbing tasks with a prosthetic arm is really, really difficult because you don't have that sense of touch. And this is kind of the new hot thing in prosthetics, is giving people this sense of feedback to know, to kind of understand where your arm is in space, other than just using your sense of vision as you're grasping for that can of soda. So maybe there's something similar there, piloting remote vehicles, where you can actually feel what it's like to be the vehicle and make better and more fine-tuned decisions about what you're doing because you're getting this additional information beyond just purely visual.
Yeah, I had heard an example, and this might be apocryphal and just an example someone was using to illustrate this idea, but I had heard about a belt that was used that gave off a very subtle vibration on the most north-facing side of the belt. And after a few weeks of wearing that belt, people just had a sense of north and south, sort of almost the magnetic sense that you were saying birds have, that had almost been transferred to people, just kind of trained into them by sort of having this omnipresent data input that was just always there and telling them which direction north was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the device is called the North Paw, if I remember correctly. But yeah, exactly that. Or it's also similar to, some people get these, I don't know if you've heard of this, people get like the neodymium magnet implants in their fingertips. So you can like feel the immediate electromagnetic fields around you. And people also describe getting kind of a sixth sense. Like you can find, you know, you wear these things long enough, you're able to find power and grounding issues in your house and stuff.
Well, that's really interesting. So what are some of the possibilities that you guys are kind of looking at, or just that you've kind of come across just thinking about hypotheticals or things that wouldn't immediately be kind of jumping into the minds of our listeners, but that you think could be kind of eventualities of this sort of technology?
I mean, just thinking outside of the box, like even with the weather data, or just thinking about data streams from the internet, there are all these data streams out there, and they might not even have to do with anything in the natural world, the physical world around us immediately. So just even thinking about how can you take that information and feed it into yourself and develop kind of new ideas or pick out patterns in that data, right? Like the stock market or something. Like, I don't know if that would how well that would necessarily work.
I could foresee a device where you input certain things that you are interested in, almost like you would a Google News alert. So you have different feelings that arise every time someone tweets about that given subject. And then you would almost have a device that almost trains into you a constant sense of how much that is being talked about at all times.
Sure.
On the Twitter sphere.
Yeah, totally. Or as I think David calls it, the Tweety sense.
But that's a thing that you guys have actually talked about, huh?
Yeah, and we do a lot of internal prototyping work on these projects. At the moment, we're actually, I would say, 90% focused towards really getting sound to touch super well working and super tested. Because in the deaf community right now, if you want to gain some sort of, or if you want to get some sort of sense of hearing, pretty much your only options are hearing aids and cochlear implants. And you can't really use hearing aids very well if you're totally deaf. And cochlear implants require this really expensive invasive surgery. And particularly in like developing countries where if your hearing loss isn't diagnosed and treated, whether it is you get hearing aids or cochlear implants or go learn something like sign language, that can develop into learning disabilities. So we see kind of like this large unmet need for a lower cost hearing sound technology. That's kind of like our core mission at the moment, while we kind of work on all these kind of more future thinking things kind of in the background a bit.
I mean, you could almost foresee a future where they almost have a better sense of hearing, or like a sense of hearing that has more dimensions and more nuances that our sense of hearing doesn't have.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, right now we're using kind of off-the-shelf components and basically just, yeah, processing the normal range of human hearing. But there's no reason why we couldn't expand that and sample at like higher frequencies and bias things so people could gain this like totally super sense.
And then on the other hand, you've given me 20 cool ideas for comic book movie villains. Like a guy who has like a constant location of all patrol cars just like input onto his back or something, so he always knows where the cops are, and then has like a third arm that is a drone in the sky.
Figure out like the perfect getaway or something, the perfect escape route for your crime just because you're tapped into all this stuff.
Well, I'm going to go build that, but thank you very much for talking to us. That's
yeah,
really
of course. I love talking about this stuff. It's a lot of fun.
All right, hope you enjoyed that. On to just brief footnotes. The thing we were talking about at the end there, it didn't occur to me until I was listening back to the conversation on my phone with headphones that this is something that's kind of already happening to me and presumably to you. Like, I have an app that converts text into speech that reads me our daily pitch docs, which allows me to read with my ears while my eyes are on the road, or on my dogs, taking them for walks, or whatever creepy thing I'm up to. If you're a fan of the Cracked website and now listen to the Cracked podcast, you're basically porting a form of consumption from your eyes to your ears. So some of this is creeping into our daily lives already. The idea that I could be using my torso to absorb reading material or information about where my child is if I'm a parent, or police scanner chatter or police car GPS location if I'm a supervillain. I don't know. That's super interesting to me. The fact that I can use an electronic device under my tongue to see behind my head like a spider is insane to me. So I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was insane to you as well. Thanks to GE for once again allowing me to talk to such fascinating, brilliant people and trusting me not to embarrass myself. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to tune in to National Geographic, Nat Geo, Natty G's, at 9, 8 Central for Breakthrough's second episode called More Than Human. Even if you didn't enjoy this episode, maybe still check it out. Yeah, we'll be back with another bonus episode of the Cracked Podcast a week from today. Thanks for listening to me.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.